rise. The judges of the United States Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals. Hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before the United States Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, draw near, for the court is now in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Please be seated. Court is called to order. The court calls the case of United States versus Technical Sergeant Godrick A. Ramirez, miscellaneous docket number 2021-05. I note that today's argument is being conducted under current COVID-19 pandemic mandates from the Department of Defense and other relevant authorities. In today's oral argument, we consider whether the military judge abused his discretion when he abated the proceedings in appellee's courts martial. Appellant's counsel, do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, with this court's permission, we'd ask to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well, that's granted. You may proceed when you are ready.
Senior Judge Lewis, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Major Alex Coberly, and along with Ms. Mary Ellen Payne, we represent the United States in this matter. I mean, conjecturing what you would find, because I don't have the devices, it could go either way. This statement from the defense expert at trial embodies the military judge's error in this case. It illustrates his decision to, one, rely on speculation, and two, ignore important facts in determining that hypothetical evidence can be of such central importance that is it essential to a fair trial. In addition, he also erred in absolving appellee of responsibility for destroying his devices and the metadata that those devices contained. Starting with the first of these 2 points, the light most favorable to appellee does not permit either one, relying on speculation, or two, ignoring important facts in order to abate a case on evidence that might have existed in a hypothetical best case scenario. This court made very clear in Terry that evidence of unknown content cannot be essential to a fair trial. That is precisely what occurred in this case. The evidence, the metadata at issue, is completely unknown.
Counsel, if I could, can we unpack that a little bit as to the nature of the destroyed evidence in this case? And specifically, what is your understanding of what evidence was destroyed?
Your Honor, I think that the first thing is to determine what the evidence is, and the evidence in this case is the metadata, the raw data in question, and that could be accessed either through the device or through an extraction, to the extent the extraction existed at all, would have reflected what that metadata was, but the evidence itself, the evidence in question, is the metadata.
So is it your position, or does the government concede that there were extractions done of all 24 of the devices that were turned over?
No, Your Honor, the government does not concede that, and the evidence does not support that.
Okay, so what is your position then on what data was held by the Houston County Sheriff's Office?
Well, the only thing we know for sure, Your Honor, is that the Houston County Sheriff's Office held and viewed tens of thousands of images of pornography. That is the only thing that the evidence showed at all. There was testimony that whether it was Cellebrite or Axiom, the two extraction systems used for mobile devices, which in this case would have been the 7 cell phones, the tablets, did create some sort of extraction of data of unknown content and unknown quality. However, for non-mobile devices, laptops, desktops, hard drives, things of that nature, there is no evidence that any sort of extraction was made. To the contrary, the law enforcement officers that testified toward the end of the motions hearing both said that we would not have done an extraction of something like a hard drive, which would have required a bit-by-bit copy taking up a tremendous amount of space. We would not have done that unless we found images that we believe to be unlawful, which they did not in this case.
So, counsel, let's follow up on that a little bit more. So once a particular tablet or cell phone was put into one of these software systems, Cellebrite or Axiom, what's the record show happens in terms of a copy of the contents of that phone being or tablet being put on the computer that is running the Cellebrite or the Axiom?
Well, the record shows, and this is the defense expert's testimony, I believe on page 147 of the record, where he talks about, you know, it could, any number of things could have happened. It could have gotten everything off the phone, or it could have just extracted images. And that is part of the problem with this case, is that the record didn't develop any further than that. The defense rested on that proposition. The military judge accepted erroneously that proposition. And what needed to happen was it needed to develop what that actually means. What kind of devices are we talking about? What manufacturers do those devices come from? What sort of the two extraction systems, whether it's Axiom or Cellebrite, which one of those two was used in this case? None of those facts were developed at all. And that goes to the point of the military judge ignoring important facts. The defense put that at issue when their expert testified that these things are device-specific, they're manufacturer-specific, they're extraction method-specific. All of these facts matter, and none of them were addressed. So the military judge erred in ignoring that testimony and allowing accepting the defense expert's testimony that in a hypothetical best-case scenario, using some unknown extraction method with some unknown device, that we would find all of those things. And there's simply no way to determine that in this case because the record was not developed. Those facts were not in evidence. And the military judge abuses discretion by ignoring the fact that specificity was required. This electronic evidence, it's hyper-technical. And the necessary degree of technicality and precision was not addressed by the military judge.
Counsel, would a return of the record to a military judge to further develop this evidence be of use, or should we decide this case based on the record that is before us?
Your Honor, I think this court can decide the case on the record before it, because sending the record back to trial wouldn't permit for any additional fact-finding. There's no additional facts the military judge can find. That goes to the defense expert's point where I started, where he said, I don't have the devices. I don't know what any of this stuff ever contained. Nobody saw it. Nobody at the Houston County Sheriff's Office ever reviewed anything other than the images themselves. So nobody knows, to the extent that an extraction exists at all, nobody knows what they contained, Your Honor. So sending it back for additional fact-finding would be unhelpful because there are no additional facts to find.
So basically, there's no way for us ever to know what software was used on any particular device, what settings were in place for that software program to know whether it was going to give the bit-by-bit copy, the gold standard, or whether it was just going to give the images. Is that the government's position?
Yes, Your Honor. And so Lieutenant DM and Mr. JC were the two that testified towards the end of the motions hearing, and the two of them said, yes, we either used Cellebrite or Axiom, or generally what we use. I don't remember which one in this case. And certainly, if this case were to be sent back for additional fact-finding, you know, an expert could testify about, you know, how those interact with Tumblr or various electronic devices. But the problem is, what we know from the defense expert is again, it's variable. We don't know in this case, and because the law enforcement officers themselves said we don't remember which one of those two we used, it would be just more speculation, and perhaps better speculation, but speculation nonetheless.
Thank you. You may proceed.
And so in addition to finding that evidence, erroneously finding that evidence of unknown content can be essential to a fair trial, speculation, we also have talked about ignoring important facts. And CAF said in Camiso that it is an abuse of discretion for a military judge to ignore important facts. And in fact, in the case Becker that Apelli supplemented with this court, note 3 of that opinion, CAF went out of their way to note that in upholding the military judge's decision that he did not ignore important facts. And so we've already sort of discussed some of the important facts that were ignored by the military judge, namely the precision that was necessary based on manufacturers, device type, extraction method used. The military judge also ignored the passage of time. It's important to note that the offenses themselves occurred in February and August of 2018. These devices were not seized till April of 2019. So that's 8 to 14 months of these devices being in the appellee's hands, him using them as he would use a device in whatever method he chose, but the military judge does nothing to account for that amount of time. The military judge made express note of the fact that the mere act of turning on or off the phone after it was returned to appellee would have changed the data. But he does nothing to account for the fact that for 8 to 14 months, appellee was turning on and off the phone and changing the phone as one might with the devices they have in their possession. So that reduced the likelihood of anything even remotely relevant being found on any one of these devices, and it is absent and ignored from the military judge's ruling.
Counsel, I just want to follow up on that. So what would you make of Tumblr shutting down Sergeant Ramirez's account in that timeline between when the offenses were committed and when the devices were seized? And is it at all important to note that with the passage of time?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think it is important. Tumblr plays an important role in this case, and I think it draws the distinction about what is charged and what is not charged. So he's charged not for something that was found on any one of his devices. He's being charged for what was found in his Tumblr account. And the evidence in this case includes what Tumblr maintains as part of their records, and that included the images at issue in this case. Now, what the case was abated for, the trial was abated for, was this hypothetical metadata that would have perhaps shown something about these images over the course of time, and that's what we don't know. And that distinction is important because he's not being charged for what is on those devices.
Counsel, if I might, you mentioned U.S. v. Terry and the issue of speculation. Can you talk to us about Simmermacher? Because Simmermacher doesn't seem to support the proposition that speculation in and of itself should exclude evidence.
Your Honor, I think Simmermacher is distinct in at least three ways. The first being that Simmermacher related to a urinalysis, and so we're not exactly dealing with the same type of evidence. Electronic evidence and evidence of a urinalysis are distinct, and I'll come back to that, but I think the first important note that Simmermacher was different because the sole evidence in the case was the positive result of the urinalysis. And that goes back to the point that I was just making. He's not being charged for anything on these devices or anything that may have been found in an extraction that hypothetically existed. He's being charged for what's in his Tumblr account. So that's a major distinction between this case and Simmermacher, where the positive urinalysis was the sole evidence. Additionally, in Simmermacher, that defendant had a regulatory right to a retest of their urine sample, which had been destroyed. There was no right to, no equivalent regulatory right in this case. And then finally, I think where we can draw a distinction between Terry and Simmermacher is, again, this type of evidence that we're talking about. So if you think about Simmermacher, which is a urinalysis, had that urine sample been retested, it had to have shown one of two things. It either would have been positive again, which would have been inculpatory, or it would have been negative, which would have been exculpatory. But there would have been an answer. In this case, like in Terry, we don't know if it was exculpatory. We don't know if it was inculpatory. It could be nothing at all. And that's what the Terry court noted, is that, you know, these camera footages, we don't know if they contain any information at all, and that's exactly what we have here. It's different than Simmermacher because there's that third option where they could be, you know, any metadata that may have been hypothetically extracted could have contained nothing relevant at all. And so I think that's where the distinction should be drawn and why Simmermacher isn't immediately applicable to this case. And finally, the last important fact that I would highlight that the military judge ignored was the fact that no evidence was found by law enforcement. They reviewed every single one of these 22-some devices, all 7 cell phones from 3 manufacturers. They reviewed everything and found no evidence of child pornography. That's why they returned the devices. That fact was not accounted for by the military judge. There's little reason to believe that anything related to the charged offenses in this case would have existed on the phone, because law enforcement, who reviewed each and every single one of the phones and other devices, found nothing at all.
So how is it then that Sergeant Ramirez, when receiving, I guess, his cell phone back, is able to find one of the images, what I'll call the JPEG, on his phone, and then later tells law enforcement about that? Is it that Houston County Sheriff's Office just missed that, or is it that the device has changed in some way and that's come from a different spot? What does the record have to say about that?
Yes, Your Honor, and that again highlights the same issue with the military judge's lack of specificity, the reliance on speculation, the ignoring of important facts. What device he found it on was never established at trial. It appears that he says it was a cell phone, but we don't know which of the seven cell phones it was. We don't know if it was one of the seven cell phones that was seized. Perhaps it was one that the law enforcement never found. Perhaps he didn't find it on the phone. Perhaps he went back into an alternate Imgur account and found it that way. We don't. None of that was developed at trial, Your Honor, and that highlights again the problem where the military judge just allowed this sort of vague speculative testimony about what may have happened, ignoring all evidence to the contrary, and abated the case on that ground. So again, he found it. I think it's important that he found it after the devices were returned to him. So, and because that portion of the record was never developed, we could do nothing more than speculate that it was on one of the phones that law enforcement received, and that it did exist at the time it was in law enforcement's hands. There's no evidence to support that.
There was testimony at trial, though, correct, that there would be some information on these cell phones that might have been helpful even if the image wasn't discovered by law enforcement. For example, they could take a look at search histories or websites accessed, search terms that they may have been using in their use of the cell phone and that kind of stuff. To say that nothing, because there wasn't they didn't see the image on there, that there wouldn't be anything on the cell phone that might be helpful to the defense, is there is other information, at least in the record from the expert, that could have been discovered on that cell phone.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that, I guess that goes to the overall standard that as the Supreme Court said, it has to be something more than some conceivable benefit. Certainly there was information on these cell phones still, but it has to be of some more than something conceivable, some conceivable benefit of the defense, something more than a hypothetical benefit. And that's the most that the expert could do. Is say things like, I'm assuming, I'm conjecturing in a hypothetical best case scenario, this hypothetical evidence would help us show X, Y, and Z, but there's nothing to establish that any of that actually existed on any one of these devices. And again, the investigator said sort of the same thing. I mean, they put forth the expert and the investigator to essentially testify about what they would hope to find, and they then turned what I would hope to find and what I would like to find into factual findings about that type of evidence actually existing, and that was erroneous. And I think that's important when you think about this case in the bigger picture, is that, you know,
before you move on to the bigger picture, I just want to return to the Supreme Court precedent. Is it fair to say the Supreme Court was looking at constitutional due process, and that's not what we're looking at here? We're looking at whether the rule for court-martial by the president required abatement. Is that fair?
Yes, Your Honor, and I can clarify that. It's, you know, and Simmermacher obviously made very clear that 703 provides standards on top. The president provided additional protections on top of what the Constitution requires. The reason we cited to Valenzuela Bernal and this more than some conceivable benefit standard is if you look to the original passage of RCM 703, it references that case specifically. Again, you know, in the discussion portion of it, so certainly nothing binding, but I think it's relevant for this court to consider. In the 1984 version of the MCM that included this for the first time, it specifically cites to the Supreme Court case, which came out, you know, within a year or so, I believe, of the passage of RCM, or the enacting of RCM 703. So that was clearly in mind, and so no, not asking Your Honor for constitutional standards to be applied here, but certainly this idea of when we're determining what it means to be of such central importance that is essential to a fair trial, what does that mean? And Supreme Court precedent can provide some background on that, namely that it has to be something more than some conceivable or hypothetical benefit. It has to be something that's material, favorable, and, you know, you can point to actually as being in the evidence.
Thank you.
And so just briefly, as I was discussing from the big picture, you know, this case sends a message about how to litigate this emerging area of electronic devices. And what happened in this case was a lack of precision, speculation, hypothetical testimony, and that should be discouraged. What should be encouraged is specificity about the evidence, about the devices, about the methods used, about the manufacturers, all the things that the defense expert testified would be important should have been developed before a case is abated. Because if hypotheticals are allowed to prevail, you know, abatements can be granted. The limits of an abatement are limited to what, you know, a defense attorney and an expert can imagine might exist in a hypothetical situation. That's exactly what occurred here, and that's certainly not what RCM 703 stands for or allows. So turning to our second point, you know, Apelli could have prevented the loss in this case. He was given the devices, and he just chose to destroy them and all of the metadata they contained. It was his actions that precluded further access to the metadata. And RCM 703, the plain language states, could have been prevented by the requesting party. That language has to have meaning and effect. And the meaning effect in this case is that the appellee could have prevented the loss of the metadata. He was given equal access. He was given, as the military judge found, the devices in the exact same condition as they were when they were in the hands of law enforcement. And then he chose to take those devices and destroy them. So the military judge in this case abused his discretion by finding that hypothetical evidence can be of such central importance that it is essential to a fair trial. He based that, again, on hypothetical evidence, not actual evidence. And in doing so, he relied on speculation and ignored important facts, both of which are erroneous views of the law and constitute an abuse of discretion. Finally, he erroneously absolved Apelli of responsibility for destroying his devices when Apelli himself could have prevented the loss in this case. And for these reasons, the abatement should be reversed.
Counsel, I want to explore paragraph 16 of the military judge's initial ruling with you in the findings of fact. That's page 4 of that initial ruling. That paragraph starts with the judge saying, as it relates to the files, plural, uploaded to Tumblr, a forensic extraction would have assisted the defense in identifying the source of the files uploaded. Can you explain from the record what the files uploaded to Tumblr, plural, is that the military judge is referring to? Is this the single JPEG image that you are saying the government has on the charge sheet, or is this all of the files that appellant might have ever uploaded to Tumblr while he had a Tumblr account? What's this based on? And is it clearly erroneous based on your review of the record?
Your Honor, I interpret that. And this again, this it goes to the lack of specificity in the case. You know, the only evidence that anything was uploaded that I can remember is, as you mentioned, Your Honor, the JPEG image. So although it says images plural, the other two images or file types really at issue, the video file and the GIF, were never uploaded. There was no evidence of that. And there was a lot of discussion in the record in our opening brief about what it means to be reblogged and that they remained in the Tumblr cloud and never, there's no evidence they ever went onto a device. So if we're talking about uploads in particular.
Then let's continue with the next sentence. It says, it would have also shown the extent of any interactions the accused had with the GIF and the video which he reblogged. Was that based on sufficient evidence in the record as to whether his devices would have ever showed anything about interactions that he made on Tumblr?
No, Your Honor. That was not based on anything sufficient in the record, and this goes back to speculation, that the testimony from the defense expert was about what he would like to find in a given case, what he would hope to find in a given case. That is all speculation. There's no evidence to confirm that 14 months after this happened, he would find any of that, or that evidence still existed on any one of these devices. So yes, Your Honor, that goes back to my initial point that all of that is speculative, which is an abuse of discretion.
Can you address whether there are any alternatives to this evidence in the form of testimony of witnesses, or I understand the government has a laptop still. It's unclear from the record whether there has been any forensic analysis of search terms or Tumblr done on that, or whether that laptop is even Sergeant Ramirez's.
Yes, Your Honor. I think the evidence that has not been lost to the defense is the fact that Apelli maintained a blog of pornography that he uploaded somewhere between 1 and 5 images a day for a number of months, that law enforcement reviewed tens of thousands of images of pornography, finding nothing that they believed met the definition of child pornography, and that the law enforcement returned the devices to him because they believed not one of those devices contained any evidence relevant to their investigation. All of that evidence is still available to the defense. In addition to that, and this is, I believe, in the defense's motion to abate, I want to say, which is Appellate Exhibit 4, page 26, that's where OSI kind of addresses what is in the Tumblr records themselves. It wasn't all that well developed at trial. Yes, Your Honor, it's Appellate Exhibit 4 at 26. That's kind of OSI's summary of the evidence in this trial. The evidence provided by Imgur Tumblr. And what that shows is, you know, what...
Please continue and answer the rest of this
thank
question.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Tumblr records also show that other files were re-uploaded close in time. There's more information from Tumblr than what was talked about in testimony at trial. So all of that, in short, Your Honor, is to say that there is still ample evidence that was not lost to the defense and is still available for them at trial.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Police counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Good morning, Senior Judge Lewis, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Captain Sarah Hickman, and along with my co-counsel, Mr. Mark Brueger, we represent Technical Sergeant Godrick Ramirez in this Article 62 appeal. The government in this case destroyed critical evidence, the electronic extractions of Sergeant Ramirez's electronic devices. It then charged him with the knowing and willful possession of child pornography. But in destroying that critical evidence, it stripped Sergeant Ramirez's ability to be able to meaningfully challenge the government's case and to be able to present a case in his own defense. The military judge did not abuse his discretion when he abated proceedings after the government destroyed the sole testable evidence in this case. The abuse of discretion standard is a highly deferential standard to the party who prevailed at trial, Technical Sergeant Ramirez. And when this case is viewed in the light most favorable to Sergeant Ramirez, the military judge's findings of fact are grounded in the record and not clearly erroneous, and his conclusions of law are well within the range of reasonable options. The military judge correctly found that the defense met all three criteria under RCM 703E, and I will address each in turn. But before I do want to first address a point that the government has made both in argument and in brief, and that the senior judge Lewis also addressed in one of your questions, Valenzuela Bernal case. So the government is arguing Valenzuela Bernal to this conceivable benefit test, essentially saying that it is required to show some exculpatory value be shown in order to meet that first criteria under RCM 703. This is incorrect for three main reasons. So first, I'd like to point out that this case, the Valenzuela Bernal case, is persuasive authority only. It is listed not in the discussion section, but rather in the drafter's analysis in the RCM. And second, not only is it only listed in the drafter's analysis under RCM 703, but it's listed regarding witness production. So not even the destruction of evidence. But third, and most importantly, this was something also addressed on Valenzuela Bernal, is that basically it's importing, the government is essentially trying to import this constitutional due process analysis, and that's simply per Simmermacher, not the test here. And it's specifically what Simmermacher overruled, basically importing that the requirement that, so in Simmermacher, the lower court found that there had to be some showing of exculpatory value, something that would be found in the urinalysis. And the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces explicitly overruled that, saying constitutional due process is not the standard here, that the president in issuing RCM 703 meant to give additional protections to service members. So this brings me to the destroyed evidence is of central importance to a fair trial, the first criteria under RCM 703E.
Counsel, if I can ask you the same question that I asked the government, what in particular is the evidence in this case that was destroyed? There's lots of testimony in the record that uses terms like mapping, imaging, live looks, extraction, full extraction. And at the end of the day, I think that I'd like to hear from you as to what in particular was done with these devices. Is there a distinction in your mind between phones and tablets and computers and hard drives? Are you claiming, or do you think the record supports that some sort of extraction was done for everything that was turned over, or just some of the stuff?
Yes, Your Honor. So to address that, I think that it is important to note in the beginning of the analysis in this case that what the military judge found was of central importance to a fair trial, what was the destroyed evidence, was the electronic extractions. That's what he found. So not the devices themselves, but the electronic extractions.
And where in the record is it supported of what electronic extractions were done?
So specifically in the record, I think that you can look at the testimony of Sergeant BL, the Houston County Sheriff's Office, the lead agent on this case, specifically the record at 65, where he testified that he reviewed mirror images of hard drives of all of Sergeant Ramirez's electronic devices. Now, granted, Sergeant BL was not certified in that, so he goes and he, you know, reviews the evidence, but that he is an experienced investigator, and the military judge went at great lengths in his findings to list out, you know, as the fact finder, why he found Sergeant BL's testimony credible, how much experience he's had specifically with these cyber investigations and reviewing these electronic devices. And the military judge specifically found in his rulings that he was very credible. And he noted specifically that multiple other individuals at Houston County Sheriff's Office deferred to him. So specifically, Mr. JC at the record at 195 to 96, this conversation is listed in Appellee's brief. It talks about he deferred to Sergeant BL, and at the end of the day, he didn't know one way or the other. He stated in testimony whether or not there were images done on everything or not. So, you know, when the military judge is presented with this differing testimony, he as the fact finder, makes a credibility determination that is supported by the record and is not clearly erroneous, and it is to be, to be given discretion regarding that.
So, counsel, if this case is about an image, a JPEG, a video, and a GIF that have been uploaded to Tumblr, shouldn't the defense at trial and the motion to meet their burden had to have shown that a particular device had Tumblr on it, a cell phone, or something to show that this was going to be of central importance to the trial? Why is it even relevant that there was a device that had movies on it that others were going to take on deployment, and that that's of central importance to the trial, that it didn't have child pornography on it?
Your Honor, so I believe regarding this, this ties back to paragraph 16 of the military judge's ruling, and I do think that it is critical to, you know, what was, to the military judge's finding and his later conclusion of what was central to a fair trial. So specifically that the electronic extractions would identify the source of the photo, but then also that the forensic extractions would assist the defense in showing the interaction, or possible no interaction, that Sergeant Ramirez had with the GIF and the video that were reblocked. That finding is supported by the record and not clearly erroneous. And it's supported primarily by Sergeant BL, by also Investigator CL, and the testimony of the only forensic expert, the defense forensic expert, that was not disputed during the motions hearing, Mr. BJ. So I think that finding is a very important finding. So specifically to what supported that, right? So we look at Sergeant BL's testimony, and he, over a period of months, he reviewed just thousands of images of pornography. And what he found is that it was legal pornography found from legally obtained commercial sites, right? So that in and of itself is basically a indication of what was contained on the devices to be able to try to prove circumstantial evidence that would cut against a government's assertion that it, that his possession of child pornography was knowing and willful. And that really kind of circled back to the key, the crux of this case, and it's in the military judge's ruling where he talks about the circumstantial evidence instruction that would be given to the fact finder. And basically by destroying these electronic extractions, the government is basically destroying all evidence that the defense would have to be able to show that it was not, that his possession was not knowing, it was not willful. And I think that this goes, kind of relates back to Simmermacher in a way too, right? So Simmermacher, and Appellee's position is that this case is similar to Simmermacher, the facts of this case. So essentially the electronic extractions is basically the urinalysis test, that it's the sole testable evidence to be able to show anything. And the deletion of that.
But counsel, didn't the government say during their argument that the sole evidence in the case was actually the information that came from Tumblr and not from these devices at all?
Your Honor, and that's a good point, because our assertion would be quite the opposite, that the Tumblr records are like the laboratory report, so that it is, all of the data is stripped away. There's no way to test it. So similarly, like the court in, that CAF said in Simmermacher, the laboratory report would not be a adequate, you know, substitute. So in this case, no, that is not the sole testable evidence. It is the electronic extractions, as the military judge said, and as he found, and that's not clearly erroneous.
But the JPEG image, the GIF, the video that were presumably to be introduced at trial were coming from Tumblr and not from any device owned by the appellee.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I want to clarify on that. I mean, didn't Sergeant BL testify on page 43? We can't even find the actual pictures that were uploaded. So the whole thing that kicked off this investigation, the cyber tip, they were looking for that on these devices, and they couldn't find it. So why should we believe that a forensic copy would have shown anything more than what Houston County Sheriff's Office did in their investigation?
Your Honor, it's not just the image itself. There is a whole list of additional other helpful evidence to the defense, and I think that this kind of relates back to a question you asked, Judge Anikstead. So, you know, in addition to, like, the potential images, it's also a pattern of behavior that this evidence, that the electronic extractions could show. So the testimony by Sergeant BL that what he found was all of this legal, commercially obtained pornography goes to his, you know, that there would be potential evidence that would be found regarding helpful search terms, browser history, information about the images and the videos. And another thing, and I think that this relates back to paragraph 16, so that there's the image, the GIF, and the video. So specifically when it comes to the devices and what could be found for the GIF or the video, there was testimony from Mr. BJ regarding the autoplay settings of the Tumblr application on the computer. So on the devices, so that is something that he could go and look at Tumblr, download it on the devices, or had the evidence been not destroyed, and see, is this set to autoplay? So this goes to support paragraph 16, the military judge's finding of fact, the interaction that he may have had with those GIFs. There's a possibility that it was not set to autoplay and that the video and the GIF were never actually viewed by Sergeant Ramirez, as these images were reblogged. So it's a sharing of something from somebody else's Tumblr account.
Is a device setting the same thing as an interaction with something that's being reblogged?
I think that it depends on the specific facts, right? So if the facts are that the device setting is not set to autoplay, and so on Tumblr, that would be potential evidence at trial that he never viewed this. He hit clicked a share button, but never actually viewed the image and the willing and the knowing and willful possession of child pornography is potentially lacking there.
Counsel, one follow-up kind of on all of this. We keep referencing, at least here, and we keep discussing back and forth. When we look at the testimony that was presented at the hearing, the expert who testified as far as, what could be found on the phone, at least says that, if we had the best forensic data available, do we have that in this case? Is that what we're claiming was lost, the best forensic data available, or is it something short of that?
Your Honor, I will admit that in this case, when it comes to exactly what would be found, there is some speculation that has to be done because it's similar to Simmermacher. Right? So exactly what was going to be that test result, we don't know because the testable evidence, the sole testable evidence is destroyed. So the defense is limited to be able to put on evidence of what, typically in my experience, this is what is found on extractions. And tying that, the defense forensic expert did sit through the testimony of Sergeant B.L. So when you tie those inferences, that Sergeant B.L. saw all of this commercial legal pornography, and then to the testimony of what, he has been able to find, Mr. B.J., the expert, what he's been able to find in his experience and what would likely, be there, that is supportive of the military judge's decision to abate and his not clearly erroneous.
And doesn't the appellee in this case still have access to be able to present evidence similar to what would have been found on the phone, i.e. the testimony of the Houston County Sheriff's Office, any number of personnel who will testify that they didn't find any images on the phone, they didn't find any evidence of anything illegal, that it contained only a large portion of legal pornography? Is that an adequate substitute?
So to address that question, Your Honor, you're correct. This goes to the second criteria under RCM 703. And no, it's not an adequate substitute. So Simmermacher specifically said, not just Simmermacher, but this court has likewise found in analyzing the Seaton case, that the judge has broad discretion to determine what is an adequate substitute. So specifically regarding that point, the military judge found that this testimony was not an adequate substitute. So Sergeant BL was the only source who actually reviewed all of the electronic extractions, but he would not be able to testify to the detail necessary to basically effectuate the purpose of the evidence. And this is similar to the Seaton case, where in Seaton, another Article 62 appeal, where this court found that the judge did not abuse his discretion. There was a witness, so that was involving the surveillance footage that was destroyed, and there was a witness who had seen that surveillance, but couldn't testify to the detail necessary. So he could say, you know, yeah, I remembered seeing some flirtatious behavior, and yeah, there's an argument that that could have been used to then potentially impeach the victim. But it didn't suffice. That's what the military judge found in that case. And that's not an abuse of discretion in Seton, and that it's not an abuse of discretion here. And that brings me to, so it is our position that there is no requirement for an exculpatory showing or conceivable benefit in the first criteria under Simmermacher. So this case is different from Terry and Seton, but it is our position that even if this court were to find that there is, that it would suffice. The judge still did not abuse his discretion. So specifically, we would argue that this case is much more like Seton and less like Terry. Again, another Article 62 appeal being Seton. So in Terry, I just kind of want to note that these cases, while comparable to Seton and Terry, I think are closer to Simmermacher because you're in a landscape of really just like single piece of evidence versus all of this evidence. Both Seton and Terry deal with, they're both sexual assault cases that have admissions, they have video, they have testimony from different witnesses regarding the guilt of the accused. Here, we don't have that. Sergeant Ramirez, the entire time, has denied knowing and willful possession. This is the evidence. The actual images that would be put on a trial, again, we would argue are like the Tumblr. But like I said, even if there is some requirement to show the exculpatory value, we would argue that this case is much more like Seton. And specifically, so in Seton, there was that witness that viewed the evidence that could talk about the potential exculpatory value. Similar here, Sergeant BL, right? So his testimony of what he remembered that evidence contained. You also have a similarity in that the OSI agent recognized the value of the evidence. So in Terry, the OSI agent didn't even look for the surveillance photo because he didn't think it was going to be any value. It was outside the alleged crime scene. Where Seton, they did recognize, like, yes, they were trying to get that, but it was deleted. So they recognized that. Investigator CL in this case admitted during testimony that forensic extractions are key pieces of evidence in child pornography investigations, and then at the record at 101 that it would most likely be traces of the evidence on the seized devices of any alleged child pornography that was posted to Tumblr. So you have that of the potential exculpatory value that again kind of is similar to Seton. So we would argue that even if there is some showing, the military judge's findings of fact and conclusions of law are still not an abuse of discretion. They're grounded in the record.
But again, counsel, isn't that tied to if we have the best forensic data available? And I think I heard you say that you aren't with that point here, that this was the best forensic data available that was lost in this case.
So I think that even So what was viewed, I think at minimum, per Sergeant BL's testimony, would be legal pornography images. So regardless, if we don't know what exactly the extraction was and maybe the specific details of, you know, this search term and that search term, I think at minimum we have all of these legal images that he testified that he saw. So I think at minimum you have those.
Is there any testimony in the case that would say that the images that were viewed by law enforcement actually contained that additional information inside of it, or was it merely just something that they could view the images and see if they found the image that they were looking for?
So if I understand...
And then would have to go back at some point and drill down further with a full-up forensic extraction.
So if I understand your question correctly, Judge Anstead, I think that specifically Sergeant Beale's testimony, there wasn't any specific testimony like regarding metadata or search terms. What there is what he reviewed, and then when you put that together with the testimony of the expert, that supports the military judge's ruling.
Didn't he testify that there wasn't any metadata created in this case because he didn't find any images that he needed to go look at? He didn't find the images he was looking for, and it handed back over the devices? is?
Your Honor, that, I do not believe that that was Sergeant Biel's testimony. That may have been in Sergeant, the other, his coworker who was certified in the forensic investigation. So that would be potentially a point that may be conflicted with Sergeant Biel. But at the end of the day, Mr. JC recognized that he doesn't really remember one way or the other, and that Sergeant Biel would be the person that would be the better source. And that was what the military judge found and explicitly, you know, held in his findings of fact. And that's far from being clearly erroneous. Again, this goes back to, he's the fact finder. He actually observed the credibility of these witnesses, weighed the different testimony, and made a finding based on that testimony that was grounded in the record.
Counsel, you say that this case is most like Simmermacher. Simmermacher, one of the things that the trial judge did was give an adverse inference instruction that said the absence of evidence that had been lost or destroyed by the government, that the members were free to draw the inference that it was adverse to the prosecution, and they were not required to draw that inference. So that was done in Simmermacher, and it's in the opinion. Is that at all part of the analysis as to whether this is of central importance to the trial? Or is the central importance of the trial just about the evidence itself?
Your Honor, it's our position that it is about the evidence itself. And once the military judge makes that finding, makes the finding that there's no adequate substitute, it is the language of the rule is a shall. So there to have an adverse inference instruction, or what the appellant alluded to in its initial brief of, you know, potential suppression of that one image, would not be sufficient. It is shall, an abatement, and I think Simmermacher makes that clear.
And I get that that's the remedy at the end of the day. If you run through the test, your remedies are abatement. But in determining whether something's of central importance to the trial, does the trial judge not get to look at the instructions that would be given based on the evidence, or look at whether the evidence is admissible? Certainly some of the information from these extracts would have been irrelevant or cumulative under 403. I mean, we certainly don't need all 24 devices copies in order to be of central importance to the trial, right?
So, Your Honor, I believe that is correct. And to address your question, I don't believe it is an abuse of discretion for the judge not to consider that analysis of an adverse inference instruction in the first criteria under RCM 703, under Simmermacher, another case law. I don't think that there's any requirement for that, so it's not a misapplication of the law for him not to. And when it comes to the cumulative nature of these devices, I think really the crux really is that all of the devices are destroyed. So it's all of the circumstantial evidence. It goes back to that instruction that the fact finder would receive regarding the circumstantial evidence to prove knowing and willful possession, and all of that has been stripped away from Sergeant Ramirez in this case. So I would like to address...
Counselor, if I might, before you go on, I'd like to ask you about, in the case of your analysis, you have two basic possibilities from a retest. Either it confirms the government's positive finding or it impeaches the government's finding. But in this case, the defense expert, Mr. BJ, testified that if data is overwritten, even a forensic extraction might not find any data, or it was also likely that an analysis may turn up evidence favorable to the government, inculpatory evidence. What weight should we place on that distinction between a urinalysis test and, in this particular case, a hypothetical or potentially a speculative look at this forensic extraction?
So two things. I don't believe that it diminishes the weight and the application of Simmermacher to this analysis. First, similar to Simmermacher, it's either going to show exculpatory or inculpatory. Here, yes, there is a chance that it could potentially show inculpatory. That argument is, you know, he did find an image on the device, but that analysis per Simmermacher, there's not a requirement of exculpatory showing. And regarding the data being overwritten or deleted, this goes back to the military judge's record findings being grounded in the record, specifically with regard to Sergeant Biel's testimony of what he actually viewed on the computer. So, if there was nothing of value if meaning that if there was no testimony regarding the just thousands of images of legal pornography, that would be one thing, right? If it was like, oh, it was all home videos, right? That's one thing, but that's not the case that we have here. So, and just to address the third criteria under RCM 703 before I end, regarding the destruction of evidence was not the fault of the accused. So, again, I think it is very important to understand regarding this third criteria what the military judge found, that specifically what the destroyed evidence was what was of central importance to a fair trial was the electronic extractions, not the electronic devices. That finding was specifically grounded in the record based on testimony of Mr. BJ talking about how forensic extractions freeze the state of the digital evidence in time, how they ensure forensic integrity, and how they're necessary for the admissibility and the weight potentially given to them. And I think it's also highlighted by investigators CL, who admitted that once those devices were returned to Sergeant Ramirez, they lost all evidentiary value. So the government's own OSI agent admitted that. That's why he did not go try to take the devices back. By the time they were released, they had lost evidentiary value. So the government's assertion that he had equal access to these devices and that he destroyed them, it's simply not, we would submit it's almost a red herring. It's not the issue in this case. It's not what the military judge found. And again, his finding is based, it's ground in the record, and it's not clearly erroneous.
Investigator CL, I think, is who you're referring to there.
Yes, Your Honor. And I might have misspoken. Apologies.
No, I don't think you did. But he was referring to what would be of value to an investigation. Is that the same thing that we're doing when we're looking at the evidence that would be available to the defense at trial? Is it viewed through the same lens, or is it different?
So I think that in this situation, yes, while he is relating that to an investigation, he's talking about the evidentiary value. Here, it still applies the same, because it was at that same stage investigation that those devices were destroyed. So again, it undercuts this argument that he had the exact same evidence given back to him in the electronic extractions. He did not, because the evidentiary value was significantly undercut. So, I mean, let's say in a world that he had not destroyed those devices and he had them and he sent them to his expert. First, I think that there's an issue with the expert testimony from the defense that just the act of turning those on significantly after they had been turned off for months and months and months at a time would significantly take away that evidentiary value. But also we have an issue with, let's say in a best case scenario, he had it and he was able to get helpful stuff from it. You're then in a position where he's not able to, when introduced at trial, that weight, that chain of custody is significantly undercut because the accused has had those the entire time. So I think there's another point there. So the government's argument regarding that really would lead to an absurd result. I mean, he had nothing to do with the actual destruction of the electronic devices, which is what the military judge found. The military judge's findings were grounded in the record and not clearly erroneous. So thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Appellant's counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll start with the government is not asking this court to import constitutional standards through RCM 703. The United States is asking this court to ensure that the standard of such central importance that it is essential to a fair trial has meaning. Because abatement is an extreme remedy. And when we look to what that standard means, we can look to Terry, which said that evidence of unknown value cannot be of such central importance that it is essential to a fair trial. And Appellee's counsel mentioned Seaton a number of times, and there's a very important difference between Seaton in this case. And Seaton, as Appellee's counsel noted, an investigator viewed the evidence at issue before it was destroyed. That never happened in this case. Not one member of law enforcement reviewed the metadata in this case before its loss. In fact, the lead agent, Sergeant BL, didn't even know it existed until he started testifying at trial. That's a key difference because what it means is, unlike Seaton, where somebody who actually viewed the now missing evidence could say, yes, I viewed this missing evidence, it contained X, Y, and Z, and a military judge could make a finding about whether or not that would be of such central importance to a fair trial, that is essential to a fair trial. What we have here is everyone guessing about a hypothetical best case scenario with the best evidence possibly available, what might be found there. And that distinction is key. And that is why Seaton doesn't apply in this case. That is why Terry is directly applicable to this case. And that is what we're asking this court to do, is to enforce the meaning of such central importance that it is essential to a fair trial.
Can you address opposing counsel's comment about the device settings for Tumblr that would have been on the device that image was found on later?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. And I think that the way to preface that is to go to your question. We don't know whether or not any one of these devices contained Tumblr to begin with. And there, that's part of the problem, is we don't, yes, in a hypothetical situation, there could be a hypothetical device of unknown make, unknown manufacturer, unknown age, unknown Tumblr software status that did contain Tumblr and may have contained information, but none of that was developed at trial. We don't have answers to any of those questions. And so, yes, hypothetically, if the perfect cell phone with Tumblr and the most up-to-date settings sees that close in time that it will contain information, certainly an expert could hypothesize that that may happen in a certain situation, but there's no evidence that it happened in this case. And that's the problem. We don't know what happened in this case. So yes, defense can call an investigator CL to testify about what he would like to see in certain cases and what he would hope to see, but none of that ties to this case. And that is where it crosses the line into being clearly erroneous. There is nothing to tie the speculation about what may have existed to this case in particular. The only thing we know for sure is that some device that has access to the internet and access to Tumblr was used. The only evidence we know for sure is that his account was logged in on Tumblr and was connected to the IP address associated with his home. That is the extent of the information available. Doesn't identify which of the 22 devices seized, may not have been those devices at all. It is unknown to the military judge, and yet he abated the case. And that was an abuse of discretion. And Judge Anixet, I'd like to address some of your questions as well, particularly about what the evidence is, what extractions did and did not exist. We maintain that the evidence in question, again, is the metadata. It's the raw data that is no longer accessible because the extraction reports were lost and the appellee destroyed the devices that would have enabled access to that metadata. But the testimony available to the judge was that, yes, some extractions of unknown content may have automatically been created for the mobile and non-mobile devices. And that's something I mentioned earlier. The problem with the testimony is that that was unfavorable to the defense at trial. So what they tried to do is hammer home this idea that Sergeant BL was some sort of expert in the field of forensics, which he was not. And he repeatedly disavowed that he was. So the government wouldn't contest that the Sergeant BL is credible as a lead investigator. He is credible as a law enforcement officer on how he runs this investigations. But to the extent that the military judge's findings are interpreted to conclude.
Counsel, you're out of time. If you can wrap up with Judge Anixted's questions and then see if the rest of the court has any questions.
Thank you, Your Honor. to the extent that the military judge's findings about Sergeant BL, that he was credible, are interpreted to mean that he is the most credible witness on what sort of forensic methods happened, would be clearly erroneous. And it would be clearly erroneous because what the evidence showed at trial is that multiple times on pages 21, 23, and 48, Sergeant BL disavowed any knowledge of how this forensic stuff worked. He repeatedly said, this is not my area of expertise. I don't know how any of this works. The lab guys get this all set up for me, and I just review the images. And then the two law enforcement officers, Mr. JC and Lieutenant DM, confirmed that he is not qualified in forensics. So his testimony cannot be used to say, yes, forensic extractions existed for every single one of the 22 devices that were seized by law enforcement. That would be clearly erroneous. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Counsel. Counsel, thank you both for your arguments. The court will render a decision in due course. The court is now closed.
All rise.